I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. So the election is tomorrow. We look ahead now to what we should look for tomorrow night with Tom Hawthorne, the veteran reporter. Joins me now to offer his take on political affairs. He's been active on Twitter throughout the campaign. At Tom Hawthorne is his handle. He's also looking back. He and Tom Barrett have been filing a regular series over at the TAIE called Some Honorable Members, which looks at dubious moments and people in BC political history. They've run a piece a day, and they're fascinating looks back. Tom Hawthorne is an award-winning journalist who contributes to the Globe and Mail and the TAIE. He is the author of the terrific collection Deadlines, Obits of Memorable British Columbians. His website is at tomhawthorne.blogspot.ca. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in Victoria today, Tom Hawthorne. Mr. Hawthorne, good morning.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Pretty good yourself.
Good, thanks.
This election campaign, it hasn't disappointed in terms of sort of the fringe, unique, zany characters that we're used to in BC politics, right?
Oh, it's always entertaining to cover politics in British Columbia. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, and you've done some of that looking back, as I mentioned, with a series in the TAIE. Whose idea was that, by the way?
Well, I have to give all credit to my colleague, Tom Barrett. I first, if you let me tell a little anecdote, I first met Tom Barrett when I was a 19-year-old cub reporter at the Vancouver Sun working the night side. And Tom Barrett was there, had covered Victoria, knew a lot of stuff. We really hit it off for our mutual love of both the Three Stooges and the Montreal Expos. The Three Stooges, in particular, have helped us cover British Columbia politics. So Tom Barrett had this idea, and you know, it's we probably owe something to Esquire magazine, which traditionally has the Dubious Achievements Award. But anytime reporters got together, and you told a newcomer or a young reporter about British Columbia's past of scandals and embarrassments, they would be just left with their jaws slack from the kind of things that used to happen. And so Tom Barrett had this idea, well, let's make a long list and do one a day during the campaign. And our original list is probably in the triple figures, including some minor events and some major ones. And we've whittled it down. We've had one a day. They're not the worst scandals, but they're kind of some of the funniest or embarrassing, and including some of the worst scandals.
That's the other thing, when people say out in central Canada are talking about BC politics, you're always quick to offer them an anecdote, a correction even at times. What have you made of how the campaign has unfolded with regards to social media and its coverage there?
Well, this is unique that we have social media. I mean, even in journalism, the reporters now say you're one tweet away from getting fired, you know, if you say something in politic or unacceptable, and certainly that kind of pressure is on not only the politicians and their handlers, but their supporters. And the Twitter wars are not very pleasant. Occasionally they're funny, which I like, and sometimes snarky, which is all right as well. But there's a bitterness and an anger in a lot of the tweeting, which I don't particularly care for. But as any venue, it's an opportunity for each side to rally troops and to try and shoot down the enemy.
Are you, pleased with the sort of interest that people say the national media have over the politics in this province? Like, for example, on Sun News, I haven't really watched it, but I know that Mr. Aiken, who has a program there, he has an hour nightly on this election. Is that a good thing, do you think? I mean,
you know, it absolutely is. I am a pretty fierce critic of much of what appears on Sun News, mostly what I would describe as some of the fabulism that might appear on the Ezra Levant show. But the David Aiken show has been a much watch for this campaign. He has devoted an hour. It is certainly from a conservative and right-of-center perspective, but David Aiken is an honest journalist. He has other viewpoints on his show, and it has been quite interesting to watch that coverage unfold for those few Sun News Network viewers. Mm-hmm. People in BC often have a big chip on their shoulders about how the national media covers events here, in part because you know, and I've written for the national media here, and I'm aware of it. But people don't like it when you write for, say, the Globe and Mail or the National Post and make fun of the politics out here. But it's hard to deny that there is a unique brand of populist politics that remains in this province. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that so many of us here in British Columbia are from elsewhere. I'm from elsewhere. I was born in Winnipeg, grew up in Toronto and Montreal, and came to Vancouver as a young man. And because so many of us have come from elsewhere, we have recreated ties. We've lost some of our ties, say, to church or political party. And so we're a little bit more open to try new things, which makes us, I'll say, susceptible to responding to some populist appeals.
Now, the polls, the last polls that we've seen, I guess the Angus Reid poll, had the NDP at 45%, the Liberals at 36%, the Greens at 9%, the Conservatives at 6%. That's generally the consensus going into tomorrow's vote. Is that right?
It is. I think people that cover this, certainly Keith Baldry, who's another friend of mine who's been along, who's the chief political correspondent for BCTV Global News Hour. He suspects that it will be more like a traditional British Columbia election, and usually they're won by 4% or less, much like a U.S. presidential election. You know, the gap between the parties is not usually all that great. So the polls indicate that it will be more than 4%, and if so, that will be a landslide for the NDP. I suspect Keith is probably right. It's probably more like in the 4 and 5 point range when people actually vote, which would still be a very comfortable victory. Gordon Campbell's last two victories were less than 4 points, and he had quite comfortable majorities in the previous two elections.
And so there's no chance of, say, a minority situation coming up tomorrow night, right?
Well, you can never say there's no chance. You know, the Greens are hoping to elect their first MLA. They've talked about getting as many as four. That's not going to happen. They might win one. Very possibly two, but I think one will be a shot for them. You may have one or two independents elected, so that creates a scenario that if the two major parties tied, then either the Greens or an independent candidate would be needed for a majority. But the odds are, I mean, the last minority government elected in British Columbia was in 1952, and it lasted for a year. That was W.A.C. Bennett's first government. Lasted a year, went to the polls, and we've had majority governments ever since.
The Green seat is at Oak Bay with Andrew Weaver?
Yeah, Andrew Weaver in Oak Bay Gordon Head is thought to be their most likely success. They're also fairly strong in Saanich, North Islands, and they're very strong in the riding that I live in, which is Victoria Beacon Hill, where Green leader Jane Stirk is running. Unfortunately for her, she's running against Carol James, who has of the NDP, who has very, very deep roots in the community. So it would be a shocking upset if Carol James didn't win. And in fact, this afternoon in Oak Bay Gordon Head, both Andrew Weaver is going to be mainstreeting along Oak Bay Avenue, which is in three or four blocks of shopping, and Christy Clark is going to be there with Ida Chong, the incumbent. So I'm going to try and zip up there for 2 o'clock to see if the two campaigners end up bumping into one another.
Yeah. Now, any time that the NDP's won or formed government in this province, both in 72 and 91, there's usually been a split in the so-called free enterprise vote. If the NDP wins tomorrow night, can we say that it was there was a split on the right?
Well, we'd have to look at the final results. You know, the conservative vote has slipped away. They were polling as high, I believe, as 23% 2 years ago. They're currently at about 6 in the polls. Generally, third and fourth parties lose 1 or 2 points from the last poll to when people actually go to vote, in part because they don't run full slates, which is the case for the conservatives in this campaign, and in part because people get there and they think, oh, I don't want to waste it. I'll vote for somebody who might win. So we'd have to look at the final results to see if enough of the conservative vote denied liberal seats that they might otherwise have won. But I'm not a huge believer in that kind of vote splitting because we don't really know if the people that, say, voted Green and say, denied the NDP a seat in one riding or voted Conservative and denied the Liberals a seat in another riding, what they would have done if that candidate wasn't on the ballot. And there hasn't really been enough study done to know if those people would have stayed home, would they have voted for the dominant party instead. So we just don't know. I'm not a big believer in that kind of vote splitting argument, which we've heard from all parties.
What happens to Christy Clark after Tuesday? And do you think that she'll win her seat in Point Grey? Saturday night it was at Charlie Demers's comedy show at the Comedy Mixer in Vancouver. And David Eby was there at the 10:30 show. And so I'm thinking to myself, if he's going to a comedy show the weekend before an election, he's probably confident, right?
Joe, that's an astute observation. And I had noticed on Twitter, because I follow both David Eby and Charlie Demers on Twitter, and saw that he was there, and I thought, this is a guy who probably thinks he's going to win. Now, I haven't had much time in that riding, and it's quite a split riding. People in West Point Grey are pretty solidly liberal, and people in Kitsilano are pretty solidly NDP. So it will be to see who gets out their vote tomorrow. It's a tough one to call, and it's also hard to know, because if the Liberals decide they want to save Christy Clark's seat, if they throw extra resources in there to make sure they get the vote out, which we've seen in the past, you can get a leader elected. John Turner in 1984 salvaged the seat in Vancouver for just that. They threw all resources at it and managed to squeak him in. They could get her reelected. But if I'm a betting man, and right now I would not bet on her being reelected there, which would probably, if that was the case, it might do the BC Liberal Party a favor if they lost. If she loses that seat, they're not going to form government. That's kind of the rule of thumb.
Yeah. Now, let's assume that she does win her seat. With this talk last week of this 801 campaign, does that mean that she couldn't function as the opposition leader, that she would be out, say, right away?
Yeah, well, you would assume that there would be pressure on her to step aside. There would be challenges to her leadership. She suffered in the sense that even after Gordon Campbell left, she had support from only one person in the Liberal caucus. And I cannot think of another campaign in any province or now federally in Canada where a winning leadership contender had such little support from the caucus. And she had a very weak member, Harry Bloy, who backed her bid, and the others in her caucus didn't. She's done a pretty good job of keeping the dissent within the party out of the papers and out of the media. But there's clearly a strong elements within the BC Liberal Party that would like to have a different leader.
And do you have any names as to who might fill that void?
No, we'll have to, it could be wide open. I mean, everybody, the speculation would be, Coleman would be interested in Falcon, some of the people that perhaps didn't win last time. There could be some other names that would come up. I think it would be, if they're in opposition, if the BC Liberals are in opposition, I think there would be quite a deep rethink of how the party should form itself. There's possibility of the party dividing or splitting, possibility of the party surviving as it is, perhaps with a different name. They are saddled with a not particularly popular brand name in British Columbia, which is why you've seen them go from BC Liberals to Christy Clark's Liberals to today's Liberals. They know they have a brand problem and would like a different name.
Gordon Wilson, would that be a possibility, perhaps?
that's why we say that BC politics is the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, how many people even know who Gordon Wilson is? And those
that's
who
true.
Do remember Gordon Wilson are going to remember him for a rather checkered political career. I was astounded that they hauled him out and had him back Christy Clark. And then again, he appears on radio. He talks very well. I suppose he has some followers. Certainly online he has followers. He has fewer Twitter followers than me, and I don't have all that many. So I'm not sure what his intent is or what his ambition was. Maybe he, deeply thinks that the province is on the precipice and he needed to step up. I guess perhaps the BC Liberals were grabbing at any straw they could get their hands on. And if it had Gordon Wilson's name on it, I guess they said they wanted it.
Now, the argument we're hearing a lot from people who are, lamenting the fact that the NDP will form the next government is this idea that if they do, we'll see a repeat of the 1990s where there was a scandal almost every week and they bring up the economy and the sort. Are those concerns rooted in fact? I mean, looking at history as you obviously have?
Well, I can't say there's any party in the history of this province that has avoided scandal. When Gordon Campbell took over the BC Liberals and they won finally in 2001, I kind of assumed that they would be technocrats and we'd have a very steady and sober handling of government. And while there was some of that, there was as many scandals, almost as many scandals from them as from previous administrations. Looking at past NDP governments, Mike Harcourt, elected in 1991, his administration did not create a lot of scandals. They governed fairly well, but at the same time, he ended up leaving because of a scandal within the party that other members of the party refused to deal with, called Bingogate, which involved Dave Stupich and various charities in Nanaimo. And when Harcourt could not get his party to respond to that in a way that he liked, he stepped aside. And that was followed by Glenn Clark. And the Glenn Clark years, those years, and then when he left and was followed by Ujjal Dosanjh, were just a complete spiral of chaos. And as people will remember, Glenn Clark faced a criminal charge, and of course he was acquitted, but the government had kind of spun away out of control.
Yeah, so, I mean, people are sort of painting him, painting Adrian Dix, I should say, as part of that, and I'm wondering, do you think people will believe that?
It's hard to know what, the voters will make their judgments on him. He has a reputation for being more of a policy wonk in the mold of, say, Stephen Harper, a guy who's, Dix is not particularly good at retail politics. You know, here's Christy Clark. She is just, get her off the bus. She'll be kissing babies and shaking hands and very relaxed in that kind of politicking, and Adrian Dix is not. I mean, it's just not his skill, which is kind of like a Stephen Harper. I mean, they're probably both guys that are probably more comfortable in the back room doing their strategies. It's hard to say how he will govern. He does have a reputation for being exceptionally well-read and reads and studies items. So we'll see. It's always hard to predict how somebody behaves once they're in power. Certainly his behavior as when he was Glenn Clark's right-hand guy, he was a guy willing to go for the jugular against a political opponent. So we'll see if that's his behavior. That's what politics is. Gordon Campbell won this enormous majority in 2001 where he held every seat in the legislature except for two, and he still refused to grant the NDP official opposition status, which was widely viewed as a guy that was seeking to completely destroy the opposition.
Yeah. Well, why do you think Gordon Campbell hasn't, or his name? I mean, I didn't expect him to play a role himself, but why hasn't his name come up more often, do you think?
If the NDP were trailing in the polls, they would have abandoned their claim to not run a negative campaign and would have been talking more about Gordon Campbell. There's nothing in it positive for Christy Clark to do so because, like say, a Brian Mulroney, by the time Gordon Campbell's time had come, people were thoroughly fed up with him. Yeah. And mostly that came from the implementation of the HST, which still is an albatross around BC Liberal election hopes. And you could see it even in the last week where the NDP just wanted to, they started doing advertising, mentioned the HST, just to remind voters who was responsible for that. HST may have been great policy, we'll never know, because it was so poorly implemented that people immediately opposed it. And it ended up costing Gordon Campbell his premiership, and they lost a referendum, and it's been a real problem for the BC Liberals.
What are you doing Tuesday night?
Tuesday night, I'm actually doing something for the first time in my... I usually am at somebody's headquarters or both headquarters, but this time I'm working for Global, and I will be part of a crew that will be examining the results as they come in and helping to declare ridings won or lost. So I'm kind of interested in seeing it. I haven't done the TV thing behind the scenes, but I do like to examine the returns and have been. So I've been studying the 2009 results for several of the big swing ridings, so have a better grip on what might happen on Tuesday night and what to look for.
Well, we're usually watching global, so we'll watch, I guess, 11, and I guess BC 1 if. That must be fun to be behind the scenes, and I mean, I guess you people behind the scenes will know, say, I don't know, a few minutes before we will, or how does that work?
Probably not a few minutes. It's pretty, you know, we want to. The numbers we get will be essentially the numbers you see on the screen, and they put them up there as quickly as they can. What we're doing is looking at those numbers and saying, okay, well, this person has retained that seat, and this person, you know, we can't call this seat yet because it's too close, or this has a history of being a swing riding, so we'll have to wait later on in the evening to do so. Because, you know, it's always very, very risky to make a call on, say, a swing riding when you've only had 5 or 10%. Yeah. Of the results in ridings like Vancouver Kilchena, which are the strongest BC Liberal riding, you know, you just need a few polls from that to see if that's still the case. I mean, that riding will go Liberal on election night, so that'll be an easy one to call. But what we're paid the big bucks for is to make the calls on the swing ridings later on in the evening.
Yeah, Tom, it's nice to talk again. You're good to do this. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Always good to talk to you, and it's been fun. An election campaign in British Columbia is everything a reporter could ever dream of.
Indeed. TomHawthorne.blogspot.ca is a website. Watch Global tomorrow night. Tom Hawthorne on the line from Victoria in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planto.